My name's Emma Smith. I work as an artist, and this exhibition is called 5 Hertz and Euphonia. The exhibition is a combination of two separate works, so 5 Hertz and Euphonia are two different pieces, but they led on to one another, so this is the first time that they've been brought together as one show. So I'm going to start by sharing a little bit about the 5 Hertz language, which is the first thing you'll come across in the exhibition space. So the 5 Hertz language was developed through a year-long collaboration with experts in music, the brain, linguistics, psychology, and we were researching together what we do with the voice and how we use it to produce relationship. My interest in this really stemmed from a hypothesis that comes from anthropology that when we first vocalized as a species, we sang potentially rather than spoke, and so there is this idea that we were singing Neanderthal and that we were using the voice primarily to produce a social bond, and this is why it's thought that maybe we were doing something a bit more like song than speech. And I wanted to think about how today, unless you're a professional singer, most of us tend to use our voices for speaking to one another. And what might we have sounded like had our evolutionary tract of how we developed the voice been, had our priorities the other way around? So we use the voice today to produce relationship and to pass on information to each other. But what would we sound like had we really focused very consciously on just using the voice for producing the relationship, and the information was a secondary or more subconscious element as the relationship building is in how we use the voice today? And so we ran a number of experiments over a year looking at the different ways in which we respond to voice, so looking at how we respond neurologically to different languages, to sounds that we don't necessarily know the meaning of, but when we hear them, how we react to different tempos, different rhythms of voice, and different choices of how we deliver the voice. So we used a number of different techniques. One of those was electroencephalography, and the headsets for this are at the back in the research area if anyone's interested to go and take a look. And this was allowing us to brain scan as we were looking at how people were responding to different sounds. And we also did what we coined language evolution workshops, where we were testing different ways in which we use the voice to try and communicate a relationship with one another without giving words or meaning. And through these experiments, we basically came to a set of sounds which were found most effective and compelling in producing empathy and a connection between people. And this is the sounds that formulate the 5 Hertz language. So it's not a language in that it doesn't have syntax or grammar, but it's a set of sounds which we know through these experiments produce a bond or a good response in each other. It's very, very simple, so it's designed to be learned while you're in the gallery. So the guide is 13 minutes long, and the idea is that you can pick it up, learn it, and know it by the time you finish listening to that guide. So the language booth where you can learn this language is on the left as you come into the gallery. It's a hexagonal chamber, and it's been cut with the letters of the 5 Hertz language, which produce a sort of stenciled effect around the outside of the structure. The letters are invented orthography, where I took a look at how every language in the world writes the different sounds that are in the 5 Hertz language and then produced a sort of hybrid letter form that would represent each of those sounds, taking a little bit from each language around the world. So the idea is whatever language you write in, you could maybe take a little bit of a guess as to which sound each shape represents. So you can have a little go looking at that around the booth. So inside the booth are a number of headsets, so please feel free to use one of these, and this will take you through the guide so that you can learn the 5 Hertz language. The guide plays from beginning to end on the hour at 15:15, 12:30, and 45 minutes past the hour, so if you want to catch it all the way through, that's the best times of when to come in. So inside the booth here you'll also see a written guide to the language, which will help you as you're listening to the audio guide. And that leads us also back out to the paintings on the walls in the gallery, which show the depictions of all of these sounds and to which sounds they relate. So on the wall facing you now, as you come back into the gallery space, you'll see a patterned wallpapered wall which has against it the paintings of the 5 Hertz language. This reads from left to right, giving you the vowels, consonants and syllables of the language, followed by the glides, as you may well have just learnt in the booth. So one of the things that's really particular to the 5 Hertz language is that all of the sounds within the language are what are known as voiced sounds. So this means that they require the vocal cords to vibrate in order to produce them, which means that everybody gives them pitch. One of the things we found when we were developing the experiments to create this work was that there was a very, very clear preference for song in how we use the voice in attracting one another and producing these connections between us. And so the 5 Hertz language really lends itself to song and is a singing language in effect. And you don't need to worry about singing or think about singing, you just say it and your body will give it notes because of how we produce these sounds anatomically. So when I was listening back to the research data we'd collected and thinking about this preference for song, I realised that not only was there this interest in using the voice to sing, people had been using really specific notes and hitting really particular musical patterns. And this made me want to look more into what we actually were doing with the voice musically when we're communicating with each other. And that was what led on to then developing the second work, Euphonia. So if we walked from here down to the far end of the gallery, we can start now to experience the Euphonia soundwork. So Euphonia was then developed with a new research team and looking now specifically at the musicality of voice and how we're using music in social interactions. This was working together with world experts in the brain, in social bonding, in musicology and in the music of speech. And so here again, we ran a number of research experiments, this time looking, for example, at our ability to discern whether a conversation is friendly or aggressive just from listening to the musicality of it. So taking out the words and meaning, can we pick up whether somebody's being nice or nasty? But also, can we pick up on the real nuances of that? So for example, if someone's being really nice and agreeing with you, but deep down they don't mean it, can we pick up on that musically? And it turns out that we can. So we have this extraordinary ability across languages to just listen to the sounds of what we're doing and understand actually what the relational dynamic of that interaction is. And so this was really fascinating. So I also started making lots of field recordings, looking at transcribing into sound what was happening musically in conversations between people of all ages, so working with babies, toddlers, children, teenagers and adults, to look at what happens in social interactions if we just listen to what notes people are hitting, what rhythms they're making. And actually what we found is that we're making extraordinary music just by chatting to one another. So when we chat with our mates and our friends, when we chat socially, we choose pitches and we make harmonies without thinking. This is all completely subconscious. We create rhythms that interlock. So if you're listening to a conversation and somebody's maybe chatting about what they did at the weekend and someone else is going, oh, really? No. Oh, did you? Oh. And all of those sort of sounds that we add in when we're chatting with one another are massively punctuated. They're amazingly musically precise. And we're producing basically this incredible music all the time. We just don't realise that that's what we're doing. And so I started making these field recordings and looking very precisely at what was happening in those interactions. And so the Euphonia piece that you're hearing up in this end of the room is just a series of conversations of people chatting together with their friends. Only what you're hearing is just the music of that conversation. And so we've taken out the words and replaced them with the sounds from the 5 Hz language. But what you're in effect hearing is just a room full of people having a chat. And I think it's really extraordinary that this is what we do when we go down the pub or we go to the cafe, that actually we're just naturally producing this stuff. And I haven't altered it. There's no adaptation or kind of interpretation. This is just the music of conversation that we're listening to. So my challenge to myself then as an artist was to think, how do I make a pre-recorded sound work that can have the same thing going on as what happens when we're talking to each other, which is that it's two-directional. It's not just one person speaking to another. Our voices are constantly adapting to one another as we chat. And so I wanted to think about whether an artwork could do the same thing. So the conversations that have been collected together and notated to perform this work have come from working with many groups, primarily across Liverpool, and then recorded with the Choir of St John's College, Cambridge. So what you're hearing is sound that's being produced by world-class musicians, but the conversations and the music that they're performing is the true, just exact replica of the music that was produced by Liverpudlians talking about, for example, John Smith's Crisps. Writing the Euphonia score was then obviously a challenge because I had all this music from the conversations, but I needed to then, A, interlock those together to make a more complex piece of sound. So you'll hear a number of conversations happening between the different speakers in the space, which in effect produce these sort of heads or these points of people chatting with one another across the room. But because it operates like this game of consequences where any part can lead on to the next, it means that in writing the music, every bar had to be able to run seamlessly onto the next, which was quite a challenge musically in writing the work. So you'll see in the middle of the space that there's a microphone, and this is picking up on voices within the space. So if you stand near the microphone and say something or sing, you can do anything you like with your voice. And it basically listens to the main notes that you're hitting within the way that you're using your voice. And what this does is it tells the sound work within the computer that's running the program which bit of itself to find that will best harmonise with what you're doing. So the score is written almost like a game of consequences, where any bit of it can run seamlessly onto the next. And so as soon as he hears your voice within the space, you're actually determining what is getting sung and coming out of the speakers. So it will find the bit of itself that best harmonises with your voice and shuffle itself to that section and continue playing. You won't hear any break in the sound, it runs completely seamlessly, but actually you will have just determined and reshaped the whole of the sound that's playing in the space. It will also be determining whether you're slightly sharp or flat, because most of us aren't perfect pitch. And so it will also then adjust the sound work tonally to just meet you at your pitch of what you're doing. So the whole sound work might shift slightly up or down, dependent on where you are with your voice. It's a little bit more easy to hear it when somebody else is vocalising than when you're doing it, because you hear your own voice, but actually you will be shaping the whole sound in this room. If you want to have a little look at how that software is operating and the jumps that are being made from section to section, you can see these through the screen on the far left, so the computer that's running the software is visible within the space for you to watch. In terms of the score and what's there, if we ran every possibility of how you could reshuffle this with visitors coming in and giving their voices and adding them to the space, there's around 2,200 years of unique sound that could be played out. By the time we're then pitch adjusting to each individual who's coming in, we've actually got almost an infinite piece of music. And so for every person coming in, there's a unique experience, a unique piece of sound that actually in all likelihood will never be repeated for the rest of human life on Earth. So before we leave this end of the gallery, there's a little research area where there's a library of some of the books and information that I've been looking at that's informed this work. So please feel free to hang your coat up, take a little seat and use the books while you're in the space. This is also where I mentioned the electroencephalographic headsets are hanging. So if you're interested in what those look like, that's where they're to be found. If you happen to have come with a baby, there is also playmats on the floor in the baskets beneath the bookshelves, which you're very welcome to take out and create a space on the floor where they're comfy in the room. If you happen to be with a small person, a little child who's with you today and they want to have a go vocalising in the microphone, you'll find a little stepladder on the far wall which they can stand on so that they can reach the mic if that's of help. So back in the centre of the space, you can see this slightly strange hexagonal structure which has robotic systems and lots of cabling and wiring underneath, and this is called the Mephistophone. This was developed by a team of computer scientists at Cambridge University Computer Department and has been developed and adapted with me to produce this haptic score for this work. So every Saturday during the run of the exhibition, there will be musicians in the space 3 till 5 every afternoon on the Saturdays, inviting you to have a go using this. So if you'd like to sing with it or to use it as a machine, then please do come on one of those days to do that. So the Mephistophone works in that it's programmed with the euphonia score. It has 16 little arms that bop up and down under the latex surfaces, and these give you which note basically is being required as a score at that given moment. It's designed to be read by touch rather than by sight, and is read by placing a hand on one of the little nodes that's bopping up and down. The hammers are divided into sections, soprano, alto, tenor and bass, for anybody who's wanting to get more complex with it. But we use it in the workshops in a really intuitive way, so you don't need to know anything about music, you don't need to produce music, don't need to feel you can sing or do anything, just come along. And basically we just play with it and think about what sounds we can make, where we're going to go up, where we're going to go down. We don't need to think about exactly where these notes are hitting, it's really a tool to be sort of played around with. So on top of the Mephistophone are then a series of handling notes. So these are the shapes of different sounds. So you'll notice some of them go straight along, some of them go up and down, some of them go up, down. They're just different forms of all the different types of sound or shapes of sound that you've been hearing in the euphonia score. The handling notes on the table are also mapped directly onto the wall behind us. So there's a series of notes, again, painted onto the wall. And again, these are just tools for thinking about scoring or ways of scoring, which just becomes intuitive. So where you can read them in any order you like, you can start on any note you like. And the idea is that groups can come and sing from them, but in a really loose, open to interpretation, improvised way. There'll be, again, in the workshops on the Saturdays, the musicians who are in the space will be playing with some of this. So you can either come along and have a listen or join in as you like. So that's pretty much everything that's here within the galleries. I think where we've kind of come back to is from our starting point of thinking that we possibly started using the voice as humans to sing. I think where I've come on this journey is realising that actually speech is a form of singing. And we haven't in our history separated off music and speech as separate things, but actually they're very much part and parcel of the same thing. And hopefully when you go out now, leaving the gallery, even just going out into the cafe, just take a listen to anyone chatting in a group. And if you just hear it as a sound, rather than worrying about eavesdropping as to what they're saying, and you'll notice that actually they're producing amazing music.